Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Happy Sunday. Welcome to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blaise Olson, your host. It was a week of an election nationally and locally, as we followed the mayor's races and the charter amendments in Minneapolis. We watched nationally as Republicans picked up momentum, which is historically consistent with presidents in a midterm. But Joe Biden's popularity is at a very low point, and Democrats are divided between the far left and moderates. We saw it here in Minnesota. In Minneapolis, the city council picked up a couple moderate seats. Jacob Frey won re-election, and the charter question number two about reshaping public safety was defeated. There's a lot to think about, but one of the things to think about this week is trust. As we go through the election results and we look ahead to 2022, the volatility of the electorate and independent voters in Virginia, where just a year ago they overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden, and this week they supported a Republican for governor. Whether it's schools, COVID, public safety, independent voters will decide the election in 2022. And who they trust will win. It's just the fact of the way in which modern elections are. So this week we talked to Jacob Frey after his election victory. We talk about the opportunity for sports betting in Minnesota with Senator Roger Chamberlain. And we end this hour, Sunday Take, the last cup of coffee, with Congressman Tom Emmer. I'm Blaise Olson. It's Sunday on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
My first guest this week on the Sunday Take is Senator Roger Chamberlain. He's an assistant majority leader in the Minnesota Senate. And one of the discussions this week was about sports betting, sports gaming. And Representative Zach Stevenson came out and said that he thought that there was a pathway to a bill that indigenous gaming interests were open to the conversation. And so that'd be good to have Senator Chamberlain join me today. Thanks for joining me, Senator.
Good to be back, boys. Good to be back. Thanks.
So obviously anytime gambling is the topic, it's complex. It's not even partisan. Where do you think sports betting stands as a discussion item in the next legislative session as we get ready for it?
Well, first, I've always believed there's been a path. There's a path forward. Secondly, I am hopeful that we can make progress this session. Mr. Representative Stevenson making the comments yesterday was a good sign. Thirdly, as you have said, this is not partisan, and we have had bipartisan discussions on this proposal in the past few years. But so I am hopeful. I see this as a different sign. I've always believed there's a path forward. I understand the tribes have things they want to review and examine before they move, but in the end, it's a win-win for the tribes and for state and for the people who want to participate and have a little fun wagering on sports and do it in Minnesota, not have to go across the border or do it illegally.
One of the challenges on this issue has traditionally been just kind of not just tribes, but some anti-gaming groups, either for faith purposes or for moral purposes. Have you heard from them about sports betting? Does sports betting come up? Is it different for people who are concerned about the morality of gaming?
Well, it is to a point, and there are a few of those members out there on both sides. It has been brought up in the past, and we have spoken to the people who are concerned about gambling and gaming. I've had conversations with them myself, and we have, in our proposal, obviously, part of the money from, part of the revenue received from sports wagering would go to a Gambling Anonymous to make sure that people who do have a problem are addressing it. I mean, the problem already exists. Gambling Anonymous already exists because we have all the stuff going on in the state now. So, yes, we have spoke to them, and there are provisions to deal with that. And I assume that some of those members who are absolutely opposed to it for moral or religious reasons will not support it, but I believe we still have votes to get it passed.
Are there any hard principles that you think your caucus or you as a leader in your caucus on this issue want to make sure come through in this? Obviously, the location is one issue. It's online in some states. It's at casinos in other states. The other, you know, issue is just kind of the technology and the border, right? Making sure that it's contained within the borders or the apps and your location on your phone, things like that. Mm-hmm. Any kind of hard principles that you've researched or seen in other states that you think are really important for Minnesota?
Well, yeah, I think mobile is an absolute must. We have to have it. Otherwise, few people will do it. So that has to be in there. We secondly, our provisions in the our proposal in our bill would say that if you want to participate, you had to go to either the casinos, the tribal casinos, or to the two racetracks to open an account. And when your account runs out, you had to go back there to reopen the account.
Okay.
To reestablish it and charge it up. So we want to make sure that there is mobile, that you do go to the brick and mortar to get the account set up and then to recharge the account. And there might be some others in there as well. So I think off the top of my head, I think those are two important things. Also, we can't think that we're going to make $1 billion a year in the first year on this, or the second year. We have to be reasonable. Otherwise, it won't make any sense for sports wage. People want to wager on sports to stay in the state and use the books in the state. And I think sports books are a lot of fun. I've been to employees. I haven't been for a few years now for obvious reasons. but they're a lot of fun. They really are set up right. They are a revenue generator. They bring people into your business. They're a lot of fun. You sit with people and you share fun with the games and watch a lot of different games. So it's win-win, as I keep saying and have said for years. It can be win for everybody. It's a benefit for the tribes and good for the people.
Last question here, Senator. Roger Chamberlain's my guest. We're talking about the opportunity or the chances of sports gaming and sports betting in the next legislative session. You brought up revenue. This has not been a big revenue generator in other states, but it certainly does generate some revenue for the state. Where do you think that falls as a priority, or how much do you think maximum revenue sports betting might, you know, bring to Minnesota's coffers?
Well, you know, before the Supreme Court ruling a few years ago, I think it was in 2018, I think, Las Vegas, the hub of it at that time, I remember right, I think the total take on bets was $5
billion
on sports. But and they had a 6.5, 6.7 tax rate. So whatever that brought in. So that was prior to that and prior to all this stuff. So Iowa just brought in $5 million. New Jersey brought in $1 billion. On wagering, Jersey's been at a little bit longer, and obviously they have the casinos there.
Right.
Some of them don't have to deal with the tribes. So somewhere in the neighborhood of a few million to start, but it could be more than that for the state revenue collection in itself. You know, $5-10 million, you know, the first couple few years. I mean, that's a guess based on Iowa and some other things.
Makes sense. Senator Chamberlain, I know we're going to be talking about this issue a lot, so I appreciate you joining me on Sunday Take, and we'll talk soon.
Well, thank you very much, Blois. At least something fun to talk about for a change. So thank you for giving me. I appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. Senator Roger Chamberlain here on News Talk 830 WCCO. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the elections in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul and what Tuesday told us with Congressman Tom Emmer. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. Joining me now is Mayor Jacob Frey. He won his second term re-election this week in a very contentious race, and a race that really kind of defines the future of the city. It was watched nationally, and obviously the last 2 years has been a challenge between a pandemic and civil unrest, and I'm happy that the mayor joins me now. First of all, Mayor, congratulations on your re-election.
Thank you so much, Blois, and thanks for having me.
So, Mayor, I'm sure you obviously in the campaign really were focused on the campaign. Have you thought about kind of two or three things in the next 4 years that you really want the city of Minneapolis to accomplish?
Yes, and I'll give you three right off the bat. The first is what I believe was the most important segment of the entire ballot on November 2nd, which was question number one, which would create a clear executive system in the mayor, a clear legislature in the council, and it would just provide clarity. A lot of people call it the strong mayor system, but really what it is a normal mayor system where there's clarity of who has authority over what, and it passed. Now, there have been some mayors going all the way back to Hubert Humphrey that tried to get this thing passed, and we finally have been in a position to do it. And so setting up this new government is both a monumental lift, but also a critically important effort. And so we want to make sure that we've got the best and brightest minds with diverse backgrounds and mentalities to be able to shape what will be a multi-generational government. I mean, this is the look and the feel and the take of how our government functions and interacts with people is really of critical importance. And that's the first piece. Secondly, you know, safety and accountability. When we said we wanted to have a full culture shift and reform in our police department, regardless of whether question two passed or not, we meant it. And now you're going to see us putting the pedal to the metal, working directly with community partners around integrating the approach, hiring more community-oriented officers, incorporating and enhancing safety beyond policing, and getting true reform on a multi-jurisdictional level. That needs to happen right now, and we're going to be making sure that we recruit and get the right people to help us get that done. And finally, recovery. You know, we've just been through a year and a half of a global pandemic. Of course, the murder of George Floyd and the subsequent unrest. Our city needs to recover, we need to heal, and we need to reignite our economy. And we are working towards doing exactly that through both policy and practice. So I think those are some of the three most important items that we'll be focusing on in the immediacy and will form the bulk of the work over the next couple of years.
I know earlier this week you talked about Chief Arredondo's decision process. What's the timeline you would expect on his decision on whether or not he would stay? And is it a foregone conclusion that if he wants to stay, that you would reappoint him as chief?
Well, the chief knows that he has my full support, assuming that he wants to stay. He and I have partnered through times thick and thin. You know, I'm really proud of the reform work that we've been able to accomplish. And clearly, you know, he's a very important relationship between the mayor and chief at City Hall. And he knows he has my full support. And at the same time, you know, I don't want to give him a deadline and rush a decision that is both of critical public and personal importance for him and our city. So I know he's going to be talking with his family in the relatively near future here. I know he's going to be making some decisions himself, and I that'll certainly meet the timeline that we have in order to figure out next steps.
Got it. You know, Mayor, politics is tough. There's cheap shots. There's dirty tricks. There's all those kinds of things. But, you know, I look at the last year and a half with you and some of the pressures you've faced publicly, some of the names you've been called, some of the personal attacks. But I saw one this week that struck me as reflective of, unfortunately, some of the times we're in right now. And that is, you know, a well-known Democrat referred to you as a Republican. And I don't mean this lightheartedly, even though I could, and it's Sunday morning. You are going to be mayor of one of the cities in America that has been ruled by Democrats for a long time and governed by Democrats. And the council has had some changes. And but how do you view kind of the values and the ideas of the Democratic Party after so divisive the race and the chatter amongst Democrats from the far left to the middle during this last campaign? What's your view of the future of the Democratic Party in Minneapolis?
Well, first I'll say a majority of Democrats in what is arguably the most progressive city in the entire country put me on their ballots and voted for me. A strong majority of Democrats in one of the most progressive cities in the country voted for me in that respect. And so clear, I don't know exactly who the individual is that said that, but you know, I've been saying for a while, you got to look at facts. And, you know, you can sling whatever name you want. You can try to label people as this or that. But, you know, my record speaks for itself. You know, I was an author of the $15 minimum wage. We have invested more money in affordable housing on a per capita basis than almost any city in the entire country. I mean, whether it's for legalization of marijuana or my stance for pro-choice or my, you know, consistent stance for both, you know, race equity and LGBTQ rights going back, you know, forever. I mean, I think there's this push right now to characterize people on whether, you know, you're only a progressive if you're for defunding the police. And if you want to look at that issue, we'll find that I and Bernie Sanders and many others are in the same camp on that, which is to say it ain't smart, especially in a city like Minneapolis, where we have fewer officers per capita than just about any major city in the entire country. I think that both sides, left and right, need to listen to fact. They need to listen to data and experts. And you got to be willing and able to ask questions. This notion of you just sign on full heartedly without even thinking it through, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And that's not the way that I govern.
Mayor, as we wrap up this discussion and conversation, what is it that the city needs in the near term to fight this crime wave? And what would be your message to people who have, you know, frankly, seen their city change a little on crime, not just a reflection of national trends, but just locally in the neighborhoods we have? What can we do quickly to try to stop the crime wave we've got right now?
My position right now is exactly the same as it's been all along, which is that we need a both end approach to public safety. You know, we need safety beyond policing because not every 911 call requires response from an officer with a gun. We need a full on culture shift in how our police department operates. And we also need police. And as Chief Arredondo has said, and as I have reiterated, you can't have a one-dimensional police department where all they're doing is responding to 911 calls. You got to have a clear investigative team that is able to investigate violent crimes, specifically target the perpetrators of some of these violent acts. And yes, they do need to be held accountable. You need to make sure that you've got a gang or gun interdiction team. You need to make sure that you have individuals that are able to respond to a wide variety of circumstances in a timely manner. And as I've said, that does require the necessary personnel. And while, you know, before you saw other candidates flip their position back and forth, depending on who they were talking to, my position has remained the same, which is that we need those officers in our department. And we're going to make sure that they are present and ready and able to respond. And I've proposed 5 additional recruiting classes for this next year. Of course, they first need to pass through the city council, but that should help and start to put us on the right track.
Sounds good. Mayor Jacob Pry, thanks for joining us on Sunday Take. I know we'll talk a lot over the next 4 years.
You got it. Thanks so much, Blois.
When we come back, Senator Roger Chamberlain is going to talk about the opportunity
and the political chances for sports gaming in Minnesota in the next legislative session. It's Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Joining me now on Sunday Take is Congressman Tom Emmer. And it was a big week for Republicans. He's been doing a lot of work on cryptocurrency. So I think it's a good time to check in with the congressman and see what's on his mind. Congressman, thanks for joining me this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, Blaise.
You know, one of the issues that you have been spending a lot of time legislatively on is cryptocurrency. Explain why it's a priority for you and what, you know, listeners should know about Congress's role in either regulating or making sure cryptocurrency is best understood by government and therefore for consumers.
Well, for me, I'll tell you, for starters, I believe it's our financial system, Blaise, that separates us from every other country on the face of the planet. In the United States of America, although this is becoming more of a challenge at times, we're the only place where somebody like me or you can put together a business plan and go into our local community bank or go into our local credit union, you know, lender, sit down and lay this out and go, look, I have this idea. I want to call it Medtronic. I have this idea. I want to call it Walt Disney World. I have this idea. I want to call it Harley Davidson. And guess what? Lender, that is the definition of our freedom. The lender says, you know, I'm willing to take a risk on you and join you in this. And all those businesses that I just I referenced, they started in someone's garage, okay? And they grew into these massive, successful businesses that support a lot of families in the U.S. and create great products, life-saving things, and recreational tools. Okay, so why crypto? Crypto is just a next evolution of our financial system. And I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. Most people heard of it years ago, associated with things like Silk Road. And you hear some of my colleagues even today in Washington will use terms like fraudsters and, you know, the drug dealers. This is where they go. No. No. Do you know the Colonial Pipeline, just as an example, because I want to put this to bed first. The Colonial Pipeline was shut down by Russian hackers earlier this year.
Yep.
You might remember. Created a great problem on the East Coast, especially for retailers with gasoline. Do you know that the Russian hackers held that Colonial Pipeline hostage in return for payment that was done with cryptocurrency?
Yes.
And most people don't know that almost every nickel of the cryptocurrency that was paid was recovered because you can trace it. It is an it's an open system that people much smarter than you and me, Blaise, they can look at code, the blockchain code, and they can see these transactions in real time and they can verify them. It doesn't necessarily have an identity attached to it, but you have IP addresses, et cetera, and you can locate. So that part aside, I see this as an opportunity to give a whole bunch of people an opportunity to get into the financial system that aren't in the financial system right now. I see this as an exciting area that's growing. It's probably one of the most exciting areas of trading that we've had in the financial markets in the last decade or two. And I think it's important that people in Washington understand, much like the internet, and I'll stop here, much like the internet, there is a place for government regulation, but I think it should be light touch because, again, much like the internet, you've got to allow this to develop and grow. The opportunities that it presents, not just in the financial industry, but in, you know, healthcare, logistics, cybersecurity are, I believe, limitless. So, yes, I've leaned in on this because from a financial standpoint, I think it's great for Americans and others around the world to have this new opportunity to participate in financial markets and trade with one another. And I also think it has a whole bunch of other applications outside of the financial space.
My guest is Tom Emmer. We're just talking about cryptocurrency. Congressman, this week, Eric Adams was elected mayor of New York and said he would take his first three paychecks or first 3 months of salary in crypto. Is this one of those issues that has some bipartisan understanding or need, or it hasn't polarized itself yet, has it?
Yeah, yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, I think nowadays, unfortunately, Blois, people can politicize anything. I mean, just get ready for Thanksgiving dinner. It's about to happen again, right? But legitimately, whether it's the new mayor of New York or it's the mayor of Miami, who has really done some things, you can pay your taxes in Miami in cryptocurrency. It really is. While people can politicize stuff, this isn't about being of one political ideology or another. Unless you're talking about this gal that they want to put in at the OCC, who's opposed to all banking, which is interesting to me. If you believe in our financial system, if you believe in our currency, I think this is something that you, regardless of your political perspective, you're going to be interested in. Now, it is a certain age too, boys, because you don't typically look at a guy like me and go, oh, a 60-year-old guy is into cryptocurrency. It's usually the younger generation, but it's coming quick. There's a lot of people here on Capitol Hill who woke up to it back in August when the bipartisan infrastructure bill put some language in it to tax money transmitters and the like in this space. By the way, I'm opposed to that because I think their number was false. But the greatest thing about it, Blois, is you had senators who probably had never even considered the issue of cryptocurrency that suddenly were inundated with tens of thousands of calls into their office by constituents and others that were very interested in this topic. So I think people at the federal level are getting up to speed quick.
Makes sense. My guest is Representative Tom Emmer. We're here on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. But this was a big political week, obviously. Congressman, your role as the chairman of the National Republican Campaign Committee, you obviously follow these trends very closely. The Republicans taking the governorship in Virginia, just some of the trends we've seen. Where do you sit today? Obviously the president's approval rating is very low. On the way it looks for next year, how are candidate recruitment going? What's your sense of the 2022 opportunity for your caucus?
Well, I would say if you think about it in these terms, Blois, in a cycle like this, really no Democrat is safe, and vulnerable Democrats have a choice to make this Thanksgiving in the House anyway. Those vulnerable Democrats that are in swing seats, especially if they're passing these big government spending bills, if they're continuing to either be silent or support defunding the police, if they're not willing to speak up about the lack of a border that we have on the southern border and the crisis that it's created, their choice is to retire from public service or lose next November. I mean, on last Tuesday, it's pretty interesting. The second most powerful Democrat in New Jersey, Blois, lost to a guy who spent a total of $153 on his.
Yeah, campaign. I saw that.
I mean, that should. I said months ago, if you're not paying attention to a border town in Texas, McAllen, Texas, electing a Republican mayor for the first time in 80 years, if you're not paying attention to New York City, a defund the police city, electing a retired cop as its mayor. If you're not paying attention to 200 parents showing up at a school board meeting in Loudoun, Virginia, a couple months ago, you're not going to be connected to Main Street USA. Look at Virginia. In Virginia, Republicans swept every statewide office, and this is a state that President Biden carried by 10 points just 11 months ago, a year ago. I've been warning about this since the beginning of the year. And it's because Republicans are on the right issues, the issues that voters care most about, because voters see what the what these big government policies are doing to our country. I mean, I've said it before, and I know this is going to irritate some of my Democrat friends, but my grandfather's Democrat Party, whether they like it or not, I know Ken Martin wants to push against this all he can. They are the ones that are now the party of defund the police. The rhetoric and the policies voice across this country have created an increase of crime like we haven't seen perhaps in my lifetime. Democrats have spent trillions of dollars when even an economist like Lawrence Summers last January and February, who tends to lean on the left side of the equation, warned them that this would drive inflation. And now inflation is at 30-year highs. Everything is more expensive in the grocery store, at the gas pump. And I'll tell you what, whether it's the policy that they want to hire 80,000 new IRS agents and they want to have your local banker reporting on any account where there are transactions totaling $28 a day during the month. You're moving money through your account to the tune of $28 a day during the month. They want your banker to send that information to the IRS. For what? I don't know. And now with these open borders in the South, Blois, this administration wants to give up to $450,000 to illegal immigrants. That's why they're just completely out of step with the American people.
So one of the reasons why, you know, Joe Biden won New Jersey by 10 points was his opponent. He was running against a president, President Trump, who wasn't necessarily popular in the suburbs either. And now we've seen this. And, you know, look, I've been following this stuff for 30 years. I've seen trends like this before where a midterm shifts very quickly based on policy or personality. Does that concern you? Obviously, I don't think it's an issue in the midterm. I'll just say that so you don't have to address that, because obviously President Trump's not going to be on the ballot. And Terry McAuliffe tried to run against his opponent like it was President Trump, and it didn't work. But as you think about some of the more extreme policies of people, you know, who identify with President Trump or identify as Republicans, some even in your own caucus, do you worry about those trends kind of counterweighting next year at all?
So, Blois, when you look back at the last cycle, we had incredible success across the country, despite the presidential race going to Joe Biden and the Democrats. I mean, we were projected to lose 15 to 24 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. We didn't lose seats. We held every incumbent for the first time since 1994. And we elected 15 new members. All of those, by the way, all of those seats were either won by a female candidate or a candidate from minority community. The policies of the last administration were incredibly popular, Blois. I mean, our energy independence, which was frankly destroyed the day the Biden administration came into office. We had an economy, at least before the pandemic, it was growing like we hadn't seen in decades. We had the lowest unemployment for African-Americans, for Hispanics, for women. I mean, there was all kinds of good news. We had a secure southern border and we had opportunities for everybody. And that's changed. So I don't see that, like you said, as a problem for the midterm. I think Republicans are going to be successful next fall. But then it's going to be up to Republicans in the House. And I believe if we're successful, Blois, we're going to take back a majority in the Senate, too. But Republicans will have to govern at that point. We will have to stay on the right side of these issues, the issues that people want us to listen to. Quite frankly, that's what happened in Virginia. They did not listen to the people of Virginia. And they showed up and said, you're fired. We're going to go a different direction. Now the key is you got to govern, and I think that'll be the key to 24.
Last question, because I think this is not, it hasn't been an issue during this midterm, could be an issue next year. But it's kind of this underlying tone within Republican parties, and that is voter and election integrity. Minnesota obviously has a strong system. Republicans here have acknowledged that Minnesota has a strong system. Are there things at the federal level on voting security or anything that you think should get done or could get done? Or are there any particular states that you worry about election integrity in?
Well, actually, I still am. There are a lot of actions taken by governors, by state's attorney general, by secretaries of state. This includes Minnesota. They were taken before the last election in the interest of protecting the right to vote while people were going through a pandemic. I mean, certain things with mail-in ballots and other things were done that, frankly, you could argue were done in the best interest of the public. But that's not what our Constitution says, Blois. Our Constitution says this is a state-based system, not a federal system. And I would argue that the alleged voting rights legislation that's being pushed in the Senate is an attempt to federalize what is a state-based system. That is not election reform. That's a complete election rewrite. And by the way, I don't want that. I don't want to see that at all. I think Minnesota should still control its elections. But I think it's the legislature we need to reaffirm that is responsible for election laws, not the Secretary of State and certainly not the Attorney General. And this is how you keep politics out of it. You allow the body that's duly elected by the people to make decisions that they feel are best for their elections, because you can have 100% of the people vote. If you don't believe that the outcome was fair and transparent, that's not going to help you. So integrity is important in the system. Integrity is achieved by following the constitutional requirement that legislatures and legislatures alone make our election laws. That's first and foremost. And then take a look in New York, Blois. New York had ballot measures to change their elections. Every one of them failed. I would tell you that right now, Georgia, which that has been completely mischaracterized, that's a voting integrity bill, not suppression. Do you know that Georgia has no excuse absentee balloting, but New York just rejected it? I think Minnesotans are better positioned to take care of our election laws than anybody else in the country. So I think we should just stay the course.
Sounds good. Congressman Tom Emmer, thanks for joining us this Sunday on the Sunday Take.
Thank you.
If you're listening to this show, it's Sunday. And at 9 o'clock, we talk politics here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hope you have a great week ahead. And we'll be back next week at 9 on Sunday on News Talk 830 WCCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.